Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 15 of the Twinsies podcast. My name is Lucas Cook.
Did you say hello, listener, again?
Yeah.
Oh, good God.
They're that's the actor there. Who are you, first of all?
They are listeners. I mean, I'll give them that.
No, who are you? What is your name?
Well, I'm Dan. I'm Dan Blewett.
Yeah, they're listeners. That's their job right now.
Thank you, co-host.
Okay, so this is going to be a little bit different, this episode, in that we don't really have a plan for this episode. We're just going to kind of wing it. And for those of you who...
I don't think you tell them that. I think we just wing it.
Oh, well...
We should probably start over now, but we're not. But safe to say that you ruined it.
My apologies. All the mystique is leaked out of this
episode. Thank you for apologizing.
For those of you who are curious as to how this process works, Dan and I usually start testing our levels before each episode, and we just ramble about nonsense as we talk into the microphones.
And we make this noise.
Perp.
Official testing noise.
Making sure we're not popping our peas or...
Which, that's a South Park reference. It was an episode where they were reading this book aloud, right? And everyone got sick as they were reading it because it was, like, so vulgar.
Perp. Yeah.
And it was, so the narrator of this, you know, it was one of those where everyone sits around and listens to the guy
Morgan Freeman.
The book, which is really strange. Yeah, Morgan Freeman has a bunch of cameos. And here's your... Perp. And, yeah,
perp.
So, perp. Perp.
Yeah, this is rapidly becoming a like pop culture reference podcast with all the Simpsons episode references. Last one,
yeah, there were a bunch.
Yeah.
So if you missed episode 14, it was pretty rant heavy, but you know, not terrible.
But for this episode, Dan, you abruptly stopped right as you were beginning to explain to me the benefits of owning and operating a rice cooker.
Also, eating food is important to me. I need it to live. Yep. I need it to recharge my muscles. And I'm a guy who likes a lot of carbs. So rice is a good source of carbohydrates. I am trying to eat more poke. So if you don't know what poke is, listener.
What is poke?
Poke is a dish I had a bunch when I was on Maui a couple years ago. And it's basically just like sliced ahi tuna and they marinate it. So obviously you have like a million different flavors of poke. And they just sort of put it in a bowl with some sushi rice. And I mean, you can kind of dress up however you want, but the core of it is just like diced ahi tuna marinade rice. So I've been living off minute rice for the longest time because rice is just kind of like a garbage carb. It's just like eating drywall, you know? So it's like, right. Well, this rice, why should I spend time prepping like real rice when it's basically like eating flour or like whatever. Like it has very little taste, has relatively little texture. But now that I have a rice cooker and I splurged for I didn't really splurge, it was like $40, but I got a Zojirushi, which I assume obviously like an Asian brand is gonna be the best brand. So I got a Zojirushi and it's just miraculous. It just like steams the rice, you throw the rice in, you throw the water in, and makes it perfectly without burning it. It's incredible.
I've never used a rice cooker. Explain to me how a rice cooker works.
It just looks like a stupid like soup pot or like slow cooker, and you just throw rice in, and you throw water in, you turn it on, and it just does one thing.
This is my whole thing. This is why I never got a rice cooker, because I was like, why in the heck am I going to buy an appliance that all it does is cook rice?
Well, I think the problem is that when you cook rice, you have to obviously boil it with the water, you know, the rice in the water, with the pot covered, and then you have to reduce the heat very, very low so that it just doesn't burn the bottom but continues to cook it so it like steams inside and like absorbs all the water. But I think most ovens or most stovetops don't go low enough where they'll end up burning like that bottom layer of rice. So that's the problem. That is the solution that the rice cooker solves. Or that's the problem the rice cooker solves.
You're saying a stove even at its lowest setting.
Even at its lowest.
Is going to burn your rice.
It's going to burn your rice.
And
then you're going to have a bad time. You burn your rice,
you're going to have a bad time. I don't think I've ever had burnt rice, though, before.
Well, just the bottom layer just gets kind of crappy. It gets stuck to your pan. That's annoying. It's a whole thing to clean it up.
Oh, okay. I have had that. That is annoying. Mm-hmm. Are you a brown rice guy or a white rice guy?
No, I think brown rice is trash. I ate brown rice for a long time thinking it was more healthy, but a lot of research on like the Asian diets, it's just there isn't really a difference.
They're very similar.
Yeah, like, you know, as far as like incidence of heart disease and all that stuff, like there's no difference between people that are eating white rice versus brown rice. Now, I think one of the assumptions is that when most of these cultures where they eat a lot of rice, they also eat a lot of like vegetables and greens and stuff like that and fish. And like, I think they're overall pretty healthy, right? But if you have brown rice with, in a crock of butter, it sort of negates it.
Do you notice a difference in taste?
Yeah, I think brown rice tastes like rice mixed with grass a little bit.
Grass rice.
Yeah. Mm. Now, if you're eating trash minute rice, if you're eating garbage rice like I have been for years, then you're not going to taste, I think, a big difference because there's all garbage.
If brown rice tastes like rice and grass.
We're losing all of our listeners. Hello, what? Listener. Oh, there's no one there anymore.
They're going to listen to this rice talk. What?
Yeah. So wouldn't take it.
What does white rice taste like? It's fluffier, kind of, isn't it?
It has like this weird, almost, I would say it's like a metallic, like minerally taste. Like, I kind of like.
You and your minerally taste.
Right. Do
you
like want to? Just regularly.
You know what we're going to talk
regular
about
white
right
rice.
Now.
Well, and this rice cooker, so I bought sushi rice, which is a medium grain rice, and it has actually a quite marvelous texture when cooked properly.
Quite marvelous.
Yeah, so it's just like way better. But obviously, since I stopped playing baseball sports and I've stopped working out the last 6 months because I hate it, I've been eating, half the time I haven't been eating great. But I'm like ready to get back on the wagon, I think. And one of the things I want to eat more of is rice and just like dishes that involve rice. So like poke, for example. I also got this great dish in Chicago a couple weeks ago. It was a poke place, but they make you a bowl where it was like granola, some yogurt in it, a bunch of fresh fruit, and actually like a smoothie like blended in and mixed. So it was almost like you're eating a smoothie with a spoon, which is kind of strange.
Weird.
I'm like, I need some rice in this. So I don't know. I'm just trying to get excited about something in my diet because basically I hate everything. You know, that's sort of the thing right now. Most things are just terrible.
I'm
burned out of all of it.
Trying to get fired up about this rice cooker right now.
Yeah. Ramen? Ramen's my other jam right now. I'm still big on ramen.
Well, let's talk about, you got fired about, fired
if we
up
can
about,
talk about rice for 8 minutes, then I think we're in good shape for the rest of this podcast.
Well, we're going to shift right from rice into water. So we just finished up our last tournament of the year, and one of the kids in our dugout this weekend he had stopped at a gas station before the game, and he was drinking some ridiculous water. Like, you know, there's like Fiji and Boss, he goes, "Lucas, look at this water I'm drinking." And I'm like, "Yeah, I see it." He goes, "You know who would like this? Dan Blewett."
And what does that mean?
It was a running joke in our dugout. Remember when you brought like that stupid German mineral water,
Gersteiner.
Yeah. So what was
that's my favorite water by a wide margin.
You had a brief kick where you like experimented with a bunch of different waters. What was the goal of that experiment?
There was no experiment. I just thought it was good.
Didn't you try out a bunch of different ones though? And you were searching for a certain taste.
Well, I do. I think everyone does have a preference for water. Like yeah. I hate Dasani water and I hate Aquafina. I don't know why, but I just like do. My body hates them.
Far and wide, people will tell me that Dasani and Aquafina are the garbage.
Yeah, I think they're both like ozone distilled or something, reverse osmosis, but they're like almost too pure, I feel like. That's what I think the catch is.
I don't know. Dasani to me sort of tastes plasticky.
Yeah, I would agree. But like I really like Evian and it's just got an amount of minerals in it that just like gives it a sort of flavor that my body just like enjoys. So anyway, this water Gerolsteiner. Which I got at Trader Joe's while I was wandering around Chicago because I like mineral water a little bit and I like it a little bit sparkling, not much. So if I buy like a thing of sparkling water, like a Perrier or something, I'll typically just pour like a third of it into a glass and fill the rest with like still water. But I've been drinking mineral water because whatever they add in it to make carbonation just gives it a little stronger mineral taste. And that's what I've really been seeking, not so much like carbonation because I'm not really into sparkling water that much. But so I was in Trader Joe's in Chicago and I got this bottle of Gerolsteiner. It said high mineral content, sparkling water, nifty little torpedo shaped glass bottle. And it is super like minerally. And I don't know. That's like their big thing.
Yeah, I have very little preference when it comes to water. I'll drink almost anything. However, my new apartment, so fun peek behind the curtain, listener. Dan and I just moved into new apartments, and my new apartment, water pressure, outstanding water pressure.
It's good. But it's important.
Has like kind of a little stink to the water, and so it doesn't have an ice. I don't have an ice maker, so I have to fill up cubes like a turd, and so like when I get to the bottom of my drinks and the ice is kind of melted and there's just the ice there, I get kind of that weird smell, and it's really bugging me. So I think what I have to do is start filling up my ice tray with like store-bought water.
Why don't you just get a Brita filter?
I was thinking about getting a Brita filter because those are like reasonably priced.
Yeah, they're not expensive. I just don't like, well, you like cold water. I don't really like cold water. I like tap cold water. So I'm fine with the tap, but
ice is my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, you definitely need two Britas then.
Are you talking about the one that screws onto the faucet?
That or the pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about getting a pitcher, but I just now thought about the one that goes on the
faucet.
The faucet
would probably work too. Get that sulfur. Get that fart smell out of your water.
Yeah. Nothing helps me chug down a nice cool glass of water like a fart.
I start
smell.
My day every day with a nice farty glass of water.
We were at our tournament today. They were spraying down the field before, and it had that distinct fart smell. It was a beautiful day, and that fart smell was like wafting across the infield, and I was like, oh, this is ruining the experience for me.
Yeah, American pastime, baseball, apple pie, and
fart water.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah. Ugh. So speaking of appliances, in my new apartment, I just got a new appliance. I got a Nutra Ninja. So it's the essentially Ninja, I'm doing air quotes because that's a brand name, version of the Magic Bullet, the one you like press down, and I'm super pumped about it. That thing slices and dices. And I was going to get one of the Oster ones. You and I were super into the Oster ones because you can put the attachment on a mason jar. So you can just throw all your stuff in a mason jar, throw it on the Oster, but the Oster is not really that great at blending, and it kind of leaves it chunky, sort of.
Yeah, that's accurate.
This Ninja, though, oof. Crushes food and ice and anything. Fingers, maybe. If you could probably blend up a person.
Don't do that. Yeah, I watched the movie Sicario last night. And speaking of horrible things, I mean, like, in the curse of humanity, I'm sure countless people have been had their hands put in garbage disposals and blenders, but the main character who I think it was Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Benicio del Toro?
Oh, yeah, it's Benicio. But, you know, he was on this revenge streak because they decapitated his wife, and this was like the cartels, and threw his daughter in a vat of acid. Not a good way to go out.
Classic story.
So don't put your fingers in blenders. Don't put other people in vats of acid. I think that was one of the commandments.
The moral of that movie story was, I always get like that that slight moment of terror anytime I have to reach into the garbage disposal and like pull something out that's stuck.
Yeah, you
like,
don't want to do that.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so nervous. I'm like, I want to shut off all the breakers in my apartment before I do that.
Well, that's what the poltergeists are waiting for.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm just going to bide my time. Yep. He's not going to even know I'm here. And then just boom.
Sitting in my freezer waiting for me to put my hand in the garbage disposal.
Well, that's where that smell comes from. It's poltergeist. Farting
in my ice cubes. This is the worst kind of haunting. I'd rather you do any other thing. Farting in my ice cubes.
But the Oster blender thing was interesting because I don't know where we figured that out, but I guess back in the day when everyone did canning, Oster was like a really old appliance company. So they were like one of the first ones to make like quality blenders, I guess, and because so many people in America at that time canned a lot of goods just to keep them, you know, over the winter, they made the typical mason jar fitting, you know, that screw top, the same as their like plastic bottom screw piece that you put underneath the blender to get the, you know, the blades attached. So then you can just take a mason jar, put the Oster blade in, and then put the Oster bottom, you know, whatever you call that thing, the screw base. And you screw it tight, and you have like pretty much your own little magic bullet thing right there, and you can just do it in your Oster blender. And it's a pretty cheap way to have your own like magic bullet.
Yeah, and it renders the little like pitcher they give you obsolete. Like I don't know where ours is. We threw it away somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a pretty convenient solution though. I mean, we did that for a long time. Just you're right. Just leave some chunks, and you don't want chunky smoothies. Plebeians?
Ain't no one got time for chunky smoothies.
Yeah, I'm no surf. What other names were there for like the low class? There were plebeians, the plebs, the serfs,
scum. I just remember, so there was this the word plebe. You and I throw around the word plebeian
a lot.
It's a great
word.
My first introduction to that word was there was some video game when I was little. I want to say it was called Rome, where it was like it's one of those games branded real time strategy, and you needed So the goal was like to build a Roman civilization. And one of the things that you needed to like build your buildings were plebs. And so there was this like little voice that would always go, plebs are needed. Plebs are needed. Like anytime you tried to build something, you didn't have enough workers, plebs are needed. And I just remember being like, I had my older brother like, what in the heck is a pleb? And so we had to like look it up. And so when I was like 10, I learned what a plebeian was. But it's just such a funny word because no one knows what the heck that is.
Yeah, we have how many plebs do we have coming to our tryout to help us tomorrow?
We have 6 plebs.
I'm going to go on the microphone and not scream it. I'm just going to be like, plebs are needed.
Plebs are needed. 4. And I'm going to laugh and no one else will. It'll just be silence and me cackling.
No one get it. Yeah. It's shocking how little of a vocabulary. And man, I'm stumbling through my words tonight, but.
Which is key. It's key when you go to talk about vocabulary
and then you can't like, use the two, words two. Good.
Yeah.
But there's so many times where, you know, when we're giving lessons, I just stop. Anytime there's an alarm in my brain now. Anytime I spit out a word that's at like a 12th grade reading level or better, I just immediately stop. I'm like, do you know what that word means? Like, do you know what I mean by that? So I'll be like, yeah. So when you're pitching, you need to make sure you externally rotate, which that's not really something I would say, but I'm like, so do you know what external rotation means? They go, no.
Right, nope.
And I go, well, that's when your shoulder lays back this way, blah, blah, blah. But there's so many words that I just take for granted that are just like really household words that high schoolers just don't seem to know these days.
Yeah, or even worse, like 12 or 13 year olds. Like one of my phrases is initiate with your lower half. When you're talking,
they don't
about
know what initiate
and
means.
I'm like, do you know what initiate means? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, what's it mean? They're like, I don't know.
Yeah, they lie to us all the time. Yeah. It's so funny. Like, look, man, it's fine. We're going to learn you.
A word that I catch myself saying all the time is contingent. So I'll be like, you know, your ability to do this, this, and this is contingent upon blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. You're 8.
Yeah. They don't know what contingency plans are.
No. They have, no clue.
Yeah, speaking of contingencies, so I was in Nashville last week with the 15 U Warbird Senators, our academy team. For you listeners there and
out and listening,
it was 100 every day with just god awful humidity. And so I stayed in an Airbnb, which we both done that a good amount this summer because it like gives you a chance to be in a trendier neighborhood potentially, like where there's more like hip things to do, you're more kind of downtown, maybe a little less commercial,
cheaper. Do you say it's cheaper?
Also cheaper. I didn't get to that yet. Oh, especially sorry. If you're bunking more than one person.
Oh yeah,
that's definitely the best way to go. I get a couple bedrooms for like the same price as like a regular hotel room. And I hadn't had a bad experience yet until Nashville. And really, my experience wasn't that bad. It was just that my host was awful. So I stay in this little one bedroom apartment. And like I said, it was 100 degrees outside. And my only thing is I need to be able to sleep. Oh, yeah. I think countless males.
God, you're so high maintenance.
Yeah. I know, I'm a drama queen, but countless males, when they are too hot to sleep, they just go into a rage. That's how my sister describes it. She's like, yeah, Ryan, my sister's husband's name is Ryan. She goes, yeah, Ryan's like, he's just so easy to get along with. Although when he gets hot at night, he goes into a rage. Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
So I kind of do the same thing, but so, you know, it was 100 degrees outside, and in this little one-bedroom apartment, there was just a window air conditioner just in the main room. And, like, in the apartment we are sitting in here right now, there's just a window air conditioner. And so, like, that's all well and good. That's fine. However, this little window air conditioner was not, like, working at full steam. It was, like, kind of kicking on and kicking off, so it just blow, like, warm, un-air-conditioned air sometimes. Then it would kick back on and blow cold air. But when I got down, you know, to like 11 o'clock where I was turning in for the night, it just was like too warm because I wasn't sleeping in the main room. Like it was a small bedroom, but go ahead.
I just imagine when it's blowing like lukewarm air on you, it would just feel like someone's blowing on you, like with their breath.
Yeah. The devil's whisper.
Right, yeah.
But the AC was in like the living room, which was only a couple of steps from the bedroom. But so there was no fan, there was just no moving air in the bedroom. It was just far enough away from the living room where the air got really stale, and it was like probably 5 degrees hotter in that, you know, 5 feet away in that bedroom than the living room where the air conditioner was. So it was just really hot. I mean, it was probably like upper 70s in there, and I couldn't sleep well. I got a really crappy night's sleep. And you know, if this was a hotel and the air conditioner wasn't like satisfactory to have a decent night's sleep, like you go down the front desk and explain it and, you know, they'd take care of it. They'd probably move you to another room or whatever. They would be accommodating. So it's 1 a.m. and I can't sleep and I'm sweating and I'm laying on the couch in front of the air conditioner, still not really getting much relief.
There's nothing worse than sweating when
I text the host and she, she's like, oh, you know, it usually works fine, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's really hot out. And then she, after a couple more messages, she's like, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's 100 degrees outside and I'm in my house with my whole family and we're sleeping on the couch because it's 79 degrees in my house. So a couple of things. Number one, your home situation, completely irrelevant to my situation because, right. You know, second of all, the technology does, in fact, exist to cool homes when it's 100 degrees outside.
I have heard of this. Yeah, I've heard of this technology.
It does. It does exist. I've been witness to it many times. And the fact that you're in a house that's not being cooled well has, again, nothing to do with me. Third, if you're telling me that you don't know what to tell me, it's not a good answer. It's not good customer service. I'm paying you $150 a night to stay here, and you just, like, don't know what to tell me. So at the time, all I really wanted was a fan. You know, I just wanted like some kind of airflow that would have been enough. It wasn't that hot. Like it was hot enough to be really uncomfortable with no moving air, but it wasn't that hot where a fan couldn't have done the job.
Right.
So, you know, I've been reading a lot of books about relationships and conflict resolution and building like friendship and trust and all these different things that help me like manage people as we're getting more employees in our business. You know, we're dealing with tons of parents now, tons of kids, and we have teams and coaches. And when something goes wrong, I don't want to just be like, hey, you know, you did this. This was wrong. People shut down when they do that, right? So I'm trying to find a good way to be just better at my job and better at getting what we all want, which is just like a smooth ride from our teams and our
harmony.
Parents and all that stuff. Yeah. So basically, if she had said, hey, you know, we'll figure something out, blah, blah, blah. It'd be no big deal. So in the morning, so she offers me no help, no solution, just basically like, I don't know what to tell you. So in the morning, I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to go look through the refund process with Airbnb because I don't want to stay here another night. Like, it was cooler in the morning, but that's probably because, you know, it cooled off overnight. And she's like, well, I told you I'd come by. And I'm like, yeah, but I wanted some sort of solution. And I offered her, I'm like, could you bring me a fan? Like, could you do this? Like, could you do that? And she's like, well, blah, 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 and just went back and forth. And she basically just kept reiterating that she didn't know what to tell me. So I went through Airbnb and filed a complaint. And this woman's responses to me got increasingly hostile. I never raised my voice, even via message. Didn't call her any names. Didn't use any expletives. I just, like, basically just, like, stated the facts. Like, this is what we could do to make this, you know, problem go away. This is the situation. I'm not making it up. She thought I was making it up because she stopped by and checked the air conditioner, and it was, you know, it was a reasonable temperature, I guess. And she thought I was like making it up. It's like, why would I want to hassle myself?
It's classic.
Like, this
you,
is a hassle. Yeah. I'm just trying to weasel my way out of this place. Like, it was a great location.
You love air conditioner pranks.
So long story short was she, Airbnb read through the messages, because that's what they do in these conflicts. They go through like the message between you and your host and see like if you guys were trying to work it out. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, like user hosts are nicer than this and blah blah, because she got really hostile. She was like, why are you being so difficult? And so they refunded my money and I found a hotel and I slept marvelously for the rest of the trip.
Yeah,
because they do have the technology, I learned.
Yeah.
To cool your room down when it's 100 degrees outside. And I probably shouldn't have, but I wrote her a message when I wrote a review.
Oh boy.
And it was just, I just explained, I'm like, you know, this could have been easily resolved if you just weren't so difficult. And you could have saved the $300 that they refunded me, because she didn't get paid for those days.
Right.
By just sending over a fan and being a little nicer. And I said, life lessons. That's how I ended it. It was just irritating. But, you know, just in all the stuff that I've been reading and learning about getting what you want and dealing well with people and creating better relationships and all that sort of stuff, you know, just at rule number one, it's just like be civil. But rule number two, just work together towards a solution, which is what I was trying to do. I'm like, hey, I suggested like she'd bring me a fan. She just said, you know, well, I don't know what to tell you. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, here, lady.
Yeah. I want to sleep. It's not a lot to ask. Just sleep.
Which, for the most part, like you said, that was... Wait, did you say that was like your first really like negative Airbnb experience? Mm-hmm. Cause all mine have been pretty decent to this point as well. But like, when, given the amount of travel that we had to do over the summer, Airbnb is just so much cheaper than going to hotels.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Even
better.
Though I desperately like stay, I love staying in the hotels. But our, it was funny. Our last, one of our last Airbnb experiences. So my assistant coach and I would stay together. His name is Harold, and Harold's just kind of like, sort of paranoid about. I don't think he's super into, he's like easygoing guy, so he'll do whatever, but I don't think he's, if he could pick, I don't think he would have liked to stay in Airbnbs all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at one of our last tournaments, we were in Indy, and he, typically we would ride together. And so we would, like, I would organize all the Airbnbs. We'd show up. I'd be communicating with the host the whole time and be seamless. But for one of our tournaments, I can't remember. I had to like stay. Oh, I had lessons. So I had to stay and do lessons. So he went down first. And when he showed up to the Airbnb, he like goes in the front door, and then he's walking around kind of checking the place out, and he walks into the back, and the door to the kitchen, so like the kitchen was in the back of this Airbnb, and there was an outside entry door, was open, and he was like freaking out. Like, I wish I could do some sort of invitation, but for the most part, Airbnbs are a fantastic way to go. The last one we stayed in Ohio was the, like you said, the whole part of the reason we do it is so that you can stay downtown, like close to the happening scene. But for whatever reason, I booked one in Ravenna, Ohio, which I apologize if you're from Ravenna, Ohio, but there's nothing to do there. It's brutal.
No one's from Ravenna, Ohio.
And our Airbnb was like kind of in Podunksville. And the pictures online looked really nice, but it really wasn't that nice. And it was just like, I don't know, it kind of smelled weird. It was not a great pick. The host was great, and like the stay worked out, but there was nothing to do within a 15-mile radius. Although we did come across this one place, and if any of you ever go to Ravenna, Ohio, you have to go to this place called The Dome and tell me what it is, because it's like this weird, you drive around the outside, and it looks like a planetarium. Like it's like a, I don't even know how wide it is, maybe 70 feet, and then it's got a dome ceiling, and it apparently is like a nightclub in the middle of this like rural town. We never went in. No windows, so it might be a gentleman's club. I don't know. Yeah, but
man, that's where they filmed the movie The Running Man. It's no longer in use.
I'm ultra curious with what's inside the dome. Yeah, but Airbnbs are typically a great way to go. So, like you said, especially if you have, oh man, if you're going with a group, housing that many people in a hotel costs you an arm and a leg.
Yeah, hotels are great, but
they are great.
Pricey. And you can't cook food there either. Not that I really cook.
Or do laundry.
Yeah. If you get a washing machine, man.
Washing machine and a full kitchen, it's hard to beat that. For less than a hotel.
Yeah.
And then non-functioning air conditioners and crazy hosts.
And you never know. You might get an Airbnb with a rice cooker in it. You're definitely not going to get a rice cooker in your hotel.
Only you could be so lucky. Full rice cooker in Airbnb. Yeah, that's coming up.
I'm going to start messaging all the hosts and asking that. Do you have a rice cooker?
One of the updates to the Airbnb website is you're going to be able to filter for a rice cooker or no rice cooker.
So we're not staying in Airbnb when we go to Vegas in a couple of weeks. Well, about a month now.
Yeah, so the next couple of weeks for us look like we've got tryouts for our teams coming up in the next couple of weeks. And then you and I are escaping to Las Vegas at the end of August.
Yeah, our alter egos will come. Well, it's not really alter egos. What is it called?
What are you searching for?
Well, our not pseudonym. What is it when you call
alias?
Alias. Oh, okay. Our aliases will come out again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I forgot yours.
I'm Johnny Holstaff.
Oh, that's right. And I'm Lars Vergas. Yeah, so we're going, let's see, Thursday.
We need business cards this time with our aliases on it.
And random titles, like made-up titles?
No, I want yours just to be a blank white business card that just says Lars Vergas, and then it has a cowboy hat on top of it.
Yeah, just like no contact information or anything?
No,
just...
And mine will be, it'll just say Johnny Holstaff, and then it'll be like the Monopoly car with the Monopoly guy in it.
With like a scarf blowing up?
Yeah, of course, of course. Gotta show the wind.
And then just like slide it to people at the bar. And they're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. How should I contact you? Oh, I stay at Park Place.
Oh, yeah. I'll be around. Yeah. So we go on a Thursday. We drive down to St. Louis on a Thursday. Then we're going to stay in St. Louis by the Hollywood Casino in St. Louis. We go to Las Vegas on a Friday, and we're staying at, where are we staying? Aria? We're staying at the Aria.
Aria, which is amazing. I'm a big fan of Aria.
We'll be there for a couple nights, getting into all kinds of shenanigans. You're a poker guy. I am going to pretend to be a poker guy.
Yeah. In Vegas, they have all the free drinks and free Perrier and free Red Bull, whatever you want. So you can get uppers and downers and...
Oh, roller coaster. Yeah. Roller coaster night. Up and down. Up and down. Ending in vomit, probably. that'll be fun. We've been to Vegas one other time, but I feel like speaking for myself, I feel like I had to go once just to experience it. Like we didn't do anything. Like we just kind of
failed.
Like,
we failed. We kind of failed at Vegas.
We did kind of fail. We kind of like walked around and I know we saw the stuff. Like I saw stuff, but it's just like, it's a very different place. So even if I could go back in time, I don't know what I would have done differently because I was kind of taking it all in. But I'm ready for round two to fully experience it. I know what to expect now. But what I'm dreading the most, so that'll be fun. That'll be a good trip. But what I'm dreading the most is we have a red eye flight coming back to Bloomington.
Well,
or wait, is that right?
Yeah, but we're staying, since we have a Platinum Amex, we are staying in the Centurion Lounge in the Vegas airport. Deal. So that's sort of our hotel room for the night.
Now, I've done almost no research on this. What is the Centurion Lounge, and what can I expect? Are people going to be like fanning me with palm leaves?
Well, I would assume so, but I think that's like the Caesar guy on the American Express card. So I assume that he will be there with the
Caesar himself.
Yeah, with palm fronds and whatever else. I'm sure the plebs in tow will do that.
Oh, we'll get served we'll get served grapes by plebs.
I think so. But I don't know, from what I can tell, it's just a really nice like lounge in the airport where you get like free food and free drinks and free couches, and
it's actually funny,
you can hang out. So that's the way to go.
I thought of you the other day because I was listening to a podcast and they had it like came up in conversation that they were asking each other, like three or four people on this podcast, if any of them have stayed at a lounge or been in a lounge like that. And of the four, only one had been in a lounge, and they said it was awesome.
So one of them been there and the other three were plebs.
Right. Yeah.
We're not going to be plebs after that.
So wait, that we're going to, when will we access that? Will that be Saturday night?
No, Sunday night. We fly home Sunday night into Monday morning.
Oh yeah. Ooh yeah.
It's going to be rough.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be that rough, but.
And then work on Monday?
kind of fuzzy.
We'll play it by ear.
Yeah. You're going to get
you get an email from Warburton Academy on Sunday at noon, you'll know.
Yeah, half price lessons because we're just not very.
They're
going
to be bad.
We're going to be sleepy.
Yeah, we're falling asleep. So, what do you have goals in Vegas? Win a bunch of money.
I mean, I consistently win in poker. Obviously, it's not like a ton of money. Like when you win in poker, it's sort of a slow and steady kind of thing. But you know, I on average win, what is it, like $50 per 100 hands is about what I'm averaging, I think. So. When I played about 20 sometimes, I played on average about 2 to 2.5 hours or 3 hours. And I usually take home about $100 every time I play. So, but there's some ups and downs. So on average, I make about, like I said, $50 for 100 hands. That's about an hour and a half's worth of work, 100 hands or so. But I mean, the money is like whatever. That's not going to make or break me, obviously. But I just like the quiet and I like the mental challenge of it. And it's a really similar game to pitching. There's a lot of strategy involved. There's a lot of analysis. There's a lot of hating your opponents because they're obnoxious and annoying, and they cry like little babies when they lose hands they shouldn't lose. But
oh, I'm not gonna like that part. I was gonna say I'm gonna be one of those guys. I'm looking forward to just being the clown at the table and losing. I'm gonna try not to lose a lot of money, but I'm really excited for potentially pool sitting. Because last time we were in Vegas, it was not, wasn't it like during a not warm time of year?
Yeah, it was like February, and it was only like, I mean, it was chilly most of the days. Like, we walked around. But it's like 110 right now there, so.
Is there a pool at Aria?
You know there's a pool.
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. Yeah, that'll be fun.
So there'll be pool time. And
it might be sweltering. And
it's going to be super. I mean, if it's August here, and it's 95 degrees, I mean, that's the desert. So
It's a desert.
It'll be 110 probably.
Oof.
Oof is accurate.
But
oof.
It's a dry heat. It's a dry heat.
Yeah, that's hogwash. When it's 100 something, I mean, it can be as dry as you want. I mean, you wouldn't be happy hanging out in your oven. It's dry heat.
Yeah. Dry in your oven. There. Yeah, get in your oven.
Yeah, but, yep, Lars Virgus will come out. Johnny Holstaff.
Johnny Holstaff and Lars Virgus.
Do you have a monocle for this year's trip?
I would happily be.
I feel like at the poker table, we should just both be Monopoly characters. So you'll be the Moneybags guy. Just have your monocle and your top hats. And since you haven't played that much, just wait for premium hands and then just push the whole stack in silently.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
You just sit there really and drink your free mineral waters, and then just every once in a while, all in for me.
Yes.
Any plebs are welcome to call.
Right. What are the other Monopoly characters? Are there more than one?
Oh, I don't know. They've changed. There used to be like the shoe and the thimble, but kids don't know what a thimble is anymore.
What's the dog? What's the breed of dog? It's like that. Isn't it the black one?
I think it was called a Scotty.
Yeah, I think that's right. You could be a Scotty.
No, I'm not. You're the dog person, but
yeah.
They've changed the Monopoly tokens recently. I remember reading about it because they played Monopoly, I think, over the Christmas break. They've modernized it. There's a Tyrannosaurus Rex now.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say that like someone was offended by one of the.
Well, purists were unhappy about it because wasn't there like a sewing machine? No, there's a thimble. There was a boot.
Thimble, boot, top hat, dog,
car. What are you missing? Listener,
call in. The lines are open. Wait, so now there's a T-Rex?
There's a T-Rex. And the Scotty dog, I think, was still an original piece, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Can I phone a friend? Is this illegal for me to get on my phone and look at the Monopoly pieces?
Yeah, I need to vamp while you...
Monopoly is still long and boring. That hasn't changed.
Okay, here's what I don't understand. Every person that you ever talk to in your entire life talks about how long and boring Monopoly is, yet there's like new editions of Monopoly like every 5 seconds. There's like Star Wars Monopoly. There's Lego. There's like a thousand different... Oh, my God. There's a thousand different variations. Who's playing these Monopoly games? Is it just like you buy it for your friends as like a gag?
Yeah, I think it's just a thing.
When's the last time you sat down and played a full game of Monopoly? I can't even remember.
So when you like lose a foot to a lawnmower accident, you buy them like Operation Monopoly. I don't know.
Here's the lawnmower edition of Monopoly.
Yeah. It looks like the original pieces were the thimble.
Wait, I have a pun. Monopoly. Get it?
I don't.
Lawn mowing.
Monopoly. Gotcha.
Okay, sorry. All right.
Jokes. There was the car, the iron.
I thought there was an iron, but I...
Which is like the old school iron. It's like trigger. Literally a piece of iron with a little handle welded on it. The hat, the battleship.
Oh.
The Scotty dog, the boot, the wheelbarrow. Man. Symbolizing American industriousness.
Was that a fact or did you just make that
up? No, I just made that up. And the thimble. Symbolizing American sweatshopness.
Yeah.
But now there's all sorts of things. I mean, there's just...
T-Rex, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, the T-Rex, he's... there's a rubber duck. There's a penguin. It's getting fancy.
What'll they think of next?
But I mean, kids can't relate to a thimble.
Yeah, because like, kids don't even know what a thimble is.
No,
probably.
No.
Or an iron.
Yeah, boots.
Yeah, these are.
Kids don't wear boots.
Who thought of those game pieces in the first place? Like what?
I don't know.
No one wants to be an iron.
No one wants to be an iron. Yeah, keeping women down. Women are great. They've climbed the corporate ladder. They've done everything, and we've got the iron and the thimble.
Right. Why would I pick iron and thimble when I can be a race car or a battleship?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Or a dog.
Let's empower everyone. We don't need people ironing and wheelbarrowing. Yeah, they're marginalizing men. What do you think, I'm supposed to just run around with piles of dirt in my wheelbarrow all day?
Yeah. Stop putting me in a box.
Landscaping? Yeah.
Stop putting me in a barrel.
Don't put me in a box here. But T-Rex, that's much more accurate. I mean, I think if I lived in a prehistoric time, I would have naturally been the king of the jungle. I know that term's usually reserved for lions, but I mean, how many lions would a T-Rex eat in a day? Like a dozen?
At least.
It wouldn't even be full after eating a dozen. So, you know, I like to think that the Tyrannosaur, it represents who I really am.
Also, another random thought, I have been watching a Netflix documentary series. Well, it's a BBC documentary series called The Hunt. No, it's awesome.
Is it about greyhounds hunting down rabbits? Because that's awesome.
It's about
coursing.
It's about predators hunting down prey, and it's awesome. What's the name of the guy who narrates the Planet Earth? Robert Attenborough or something like that?
Oh, I don't know.
It's awesome. Morgan Freeman. You need to watch it. You and I are both big fans of what's that Twitter account?
Nature is scary.
Nature is scary. It's like that, but in movie form.
Oh my god, I love that Twitter so much. It's like little annoying dog gets too close to the Florida Everglades. Crocodile just yanks him by the head in the water, and we'll see. It's just like it's a bunch of gifs. It's awesome. Animals getting eaten. That pelican eating a
that one's terrifying.
What was it eating? What kind of bird was it? It was like a pigeon, right?
I think it was a pigeon.
Pelican eating a pigeon
or a seagull
flapping. Yeah, maybe a seagull. Either one. It's crazy.
Which I didn't know that was a thing. That the pelican just like eats it and it's flapping around and it's like gullet, like or yeah, beaky thing.
Yeah,
and
that's
he just
wild.
Like eats it.
And he's just like hanging out, just like, all right, well, hey man, just keep struggling. Like this has happened. So might as well deal with it.
You would appreciate the fact that there's a praying mantis segment on that show.
I love praying mantises.
Yeah.
They're terrifying creatures. And that's one of my would you rathers. Where I've also been asked kids, if you could have a bodyguard to go through the most dangerous neighborhood, would you rather it be a 10-foot crocodile or a 6-foot praying mantis?
Oh, interesting. I think, yeah, I mean,
I would take the praying mantis.
I think you got to take the praying mantis.
I mean, they're just diabolical looking creatures. They eat like everything head first. They just snatch you. They don't care. They'll just eat something like 5 times
their
size.
You know, on their arms, they have those spikes to like impale
just
stuff.
Like, yeah,
imagine
just,
that at 6 feet tall.
Yeah, no, it'd just be cutting people in half and just right. Bacha.
There's also crocodiles on that
show. They look like aliens too. Praying mantises are beasts of an animal. They're legit.
The whole insect world is terrifying.
And they're just so big. Like they almost seem like a person compared to other bugs. Like most bugs are just so small, but praying mantises, like you wouldn't step on a praying mantis.
Well, kind of like anatomically too. They kind of stand upright and they have like a head and shoulders.
Yeah. Like
it's weird.
They're so big that if you stepped on a praying mantis, I feel like you'd feel bad because it'd be like stepping on like a...
It'd be very crunchy.
Yeah, it'd just be
sad.
A lot. Like they're big. Like I want to have a buddy. I want to have a sidekick who's like a praying mantis. Just hangs out with me.
Toboggan?
Yeah.
Man. Circa 2011.
That's another It's Always Sunny 12. In Philadelphia reference right there. Mantis toboggan.
Yeah, there was also a crocodile segment where I guess maybe they're wildebeests. They're on their migratory pattern, and there's this one body of water that they always stop at to get drinks on their, you know, on their big trek. And it's so funny because all these crocodiles know this, so they're just planted underneath the water, like waiting for these wildebeests to come. And these wildebeests are like obviously like dying of thirst, so they have to drink. And they're like creeping up to the water, and they know the crocodiles are in there, and they're just like blayup, 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 like drinking out of the thing. And it's just like every 2 seconds there's a crocodile flying out to like grab him. It's terrifying.
Well, it's crazy thinking of how stupid animals are.
They're so stupid because then they go right back to drinking and then they die.
Just be the last wildebeest. All the crocodiles will be full.
Yeah.
They'll be deep in the water just like rubbing their bellies or whatever they do, and you'll just drink all the water you want.
Oh, it's terrifying.
I mean, the water have all that, probably have a lot of blood in it by that point, but yeah.
Hey, you drink your buddy's blood. It's just part of the game.
But speaking of which, I was listening to this book, which just went on forever. I've listened to a lot of audiobooks since I've been driving so much. And this book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Oh, I've heard of this book.
Dear God.
And you weren't a fan.
Well, so, I mean, I'm a philosophy major, so a large piece of me liked it because he rambled on philosophically about quality and all these just like things, and he just talks about motorcycle maintenance and caring for his cycle, and just like, in the one hand, like I'm kind of that narrator, like I agree with doing things right and taking things apart, and I've always had an affliction for mechanical things. I used to like to weld and work on my old 67 Bronco, and I like making things out of wood now that, you know, I'm like needing tables for my apartment, stuff like that. But that book, and all, at least in audio form. So part of the thing with me is, I like space out a lot because good books and good movies to me just inspire me to like start thinking deeply. And then I just sort of lose track of where I am. So a lot of these audiobooks I struggle with because if they're really like bullet pointy where they're like, here, I'm going to tell you 5 hacks to blah, 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 blah. I'll just start thinking if one of them like gets me thinking, and then I'll like won't hear the rest of it. But Anyway, so this book, it took me a better part of a month to finish because it was just so boring. And the narrator, the guy who read the audiobook, was one of the most boring humans on the face of the earth. But so finally, this book comes to a close, and I just, like, I kind of liked it. I kind of didn't like it because it was really boring, but the part of me that took philosophy classes in college, you know, that gritted through it and got a philosophy degree, kind of enjoyed it. I don't know.
Yeah, I've read a lot of discourse about that book online, and it's very polarizing. Some people are like, "Oh man, every person has to read this book," and then a lot of people are like, "This book kind of sucks and it's boring," and I'm like, "Eh, I'll give it a shot at some point." But
it's imagine that you're listening to a book that sounds like this at this.
Well,
pace.
I will not be listening to it. I'll be reading it. I don't know that I could listen to it. Do you remember what it was, like, hour-wise, total?
It was a lot. I mean, most of the audiobooks that I listen to are between 7 and 12 hours, I think. And this one was, like, maybe 17. It was really long.
Yeah. But, like you said, there's nothing better to do on a car ride.
Yeah, but that one... And the problem is, like, so the plot of that book is... I'm not giving anything away, but the narrator...
The motorcycle dies in the end.
The narrator's on a motorcycle trip with his son and this other couple. Halfway through the trip, the other couple kind of disembark. I don't remember why they disembarked, because I was spacing out during that time. And he introduces at this one point this other character named Phaedrus, who I didn't know who Phaedrus was for about 6 hours. I'm like, who is Phaedrus? Who is Phaedrus? I don't know.
But where are they going? Why
the
are
whole
they
middle
leave?
Third of the book, I didn't know who he was because I spaced out during that time and I was trying to piece it together with context clues, and I mostly did, but over time you realize that Phaedrus is the narrator, that they're sort of one and the same, and they're sort of like fighting each other. It's kind of like remembering he's like got past memories of Phaedrus, and in the end, you know, like they are the same person. It's
okay,
weird.
So Phaedrus is a person?
So he starts having dreams that he's this person, Phaedrus, and he, like, knows all about Phaedrus, who was, like, this philosophy student who eventually went insane thinking over what was quality. Mm. So if you want to listen to some really dry discourse about quality for hours, this book is for you.
All right, well.
And so Phaedrus, he starts to realize that Phaedrus is, like, taking back over, and basically, like, the narrator, who's a motorcycle driver, he was Phaedrus. Phaedrus went insane, got electroshock therapy, and then I guess was cured by it. Again, somewhat foggy, because I'd probably have to listen to the story again to really get it, and I feel guilty about that, but there's no shot I'm gonna listen to it again.
Based on the synopsis, it's falling down pretty low on my list.
So Phaedrus, after the therapy, was suppressed, and the narrator became. And then over time, Phaedrus is, like, starting to, like, take over again. And so Phaedrus does some weird things. And at the end, the narrator's certain that he has to check himself back into a mental hospital because he's going insane again, and Phaedrus is coming back. And he fears for his son's safety because he's becoming Phaedrus again.
This is fiction.
And then it resolves.
A fiction book?
Yeah, but it's also, like, heavily based on, like, the author, I guess.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's sad that I'm talking about this out loud, like, knowing as little about it as I do, but at the same time, this was how all my philosophical readings in college were, where I read them, and I, like, really read them, but you can only read them so well.
Yeah, then you get done, and you're like, well.
Because you're like, oh, God, that, I, like, read that, but I didn't understand it, and then
plus
I had to kind of move on.
You can't keep
on,
going and back and rereading it 500
times.
That
was my whole life. I'd go, like, 4 pages an hour, and I was like, good God. And I still don't even know what I read. But there's just, like, with all these books, it's just, there's so much, and you finish it, and you're like, I learned, like, one thing, or I learned two things. What happened? I read 400 pages, and I learned
that's
this.
Like,
it's crazy, but that's what books are.
Yeah. I've always been like that, where it's always a point of frustration where I'll read just, like, tons of books or watch tons of movies or anything, and then, like you said, most of it washes away. Like, I don't, like you said, you're lucky to take away a couple things from, like, each one. And it's like, oh, I just spent so much time reading that book, and I don't like remember any of it. Like, I just finished The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, yeah, that's all you carrying that brick around. That was crazy.
It's so long. But I got done, and I knew that I enjoyed the experience, but I don't really remember that much from... I liked that, but I don't really remember what it was.
Yeah. What happened in pages 265 through 984?
And apparently the rumor is that Alexandre Dumas was paid by the word when he wrote that, which is why it's so long. And when you read it, there are just like these super long passages where he's talking about these very, very specific places in Italy and in France, which I have no context for. And so it's just like, you know, there'll be a 80-word section where he's like, blah, 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 and it's just like all nonsense. It's like gobbledygook. And I'm like, well, that was a waste of time.
Perfect.
It was still good.
So, listener, we just took a little break after Lucas was talking about Monte Cristo because I forgot why I told the whole story about Zen and motorcycle maintenance.
I was waiting for the payoff.
And
here it comes.
We were trying to figure it out, and it seemed that all was in vain until I remembered. So we're talking about animals eating each other.
Here
and
we
then
come.
How
Coming
stupid
back.
Animals are.
Full circle.
And then in that book, towards the end, he talks about the old South Indian monkey trap. Do you know what that is?
The South Indian monkey trap?
It's fascinating. Everyone, listener, you should definitely Google monkey trap. So it shows how stupid animals are. Even monkeys, like, you know, really smart creatures in the animal world. What they do is they'll take a gourd or they'll dig a hole, like, or they'll carve a hole into a rock or whatever it is. They need something that's just wide enough for the monkey to slip his hand, like fingers pointed straight, into the thing. And then he talks about how the monkey can't separate. So they'll put some food in this. So the monkey's got to reach his hand in. He'll grab the food. And oftentimes they'll do this in plain sight because monkeys are inquisitive creatures. So this video I watched after I read this passage, I was interested. I stopped at a rest stop, so I Googled it. And they show, you know, this villager, he's like hollowing out this like melon. And he takes like the seeds from the melon. And there's this monkey sitting over on the hill watching him. And he has this hole like already like drilled into like this big like mud hill or something. And he takes these seeds from this melon and he like puts them in the hole and the monkey's just watching him. And so the villager like goes away and the monkey can still see the villager. But the narrator's talking about like, oh, you know, the curiosity is just killing him. And he knows that there's a little bit of danger because the villager's right there. But, you know, the curiosity just overcomes him. So the monkey goes down and he reaches his hand in that hole. And usually it's food, obviously. Like usually it's like rice. And in the book they talk about rice, that they put rice inside this gourd. And they tie the gourd to a tree branch or whatever, so it can't go anywhere. So the monkey will reach in, grab the food, you know, grab the rice or grab the melon or whatever it is. And then because he made a fist, he now can't pull his hand back out. And so then the villagers are just coming over to take him away and, you know, put him in captivity or eat him or whatever it is. And the monkey will not let go. And so he's screaming. He's screaming, going nuts as they're just getting closer. And it's like, dude.
Let go
of the rice and you're free. But he can't, in his little brain, resolve the conflict between I want rice and I want freedom. And he can't value, he can't put them in order and value which one, you know, should be over the other, which is clearly his freedom. So just fascinating example of how
stupid,
how far we are above animals. Yeah, even the smart ones like monkeys. I mean, that's crazy. And I don't know if that applies to all apes. Just, I mean, in this example, it's like these little small ones, but I don't know. Is that working on gorillas? I'm not going to go try to capture a gorilla under any circumstances. Unless I have like a chainsaw while he's just like holding there on me. I was like, ugh, that's kind of messy, but.
But at the same time.
It's crazy to think that they can, even as dumb as they are, that they couldn't figure that out.
Yeah. Well, but then on the other side, like when that documentary I was watching, they were talking about these wild dogs and how they'll hunt down their prey. And they're like, I mean, they're stupid, idiot, dumb dogs, but they're also super
really smart.
Yeah. And like, there's like, there'll be one that kind of takes the point and they're, what they do is they obviously, they chase these animals down, but they have to wear them down first because they just go up and attack them. They'll just like get like kicked and die. Mm-hmm. So they have to like kind of sort of half chase, half, you know, lay back. And when one gets tired, they'll like switch off. And then the whole time they're also flanking on either side so that he doesn't, and it's just like insane how well thought out their attack is, but
yeah.
They're stupid dogs too. Yeah.
Yeah, animals are crazy.
Animals are crazy, man.
Well, like all this stuff, how do they figure that out? I mean, they work together. Obviously, like even ants that basically like have zero consciousness and thought, they all work together as like a super organism. You know, like one ant isn't really, I don't think it's considered an organism as much as like an ant colony is considered a super organism. But it's just like crazy how they all work together and do these complex tasks. And then they put their hand inside a hole and they have some food in it and they can't.
There's also a spider. There's also a spider that eats other spiders. One of the things it does is, you know how spiders stalk their prey, is they make a web and then they kind of sit in the center and they wait for vibrations. And when they feel a vibration, they run off. And like, so this other spider will sit at the bottom of a web and pluck the strings. And when it plucks the strings, this other spider's like, ooh, food. And when it comes, it just kills it. And that's crazy. Like its little leg goes boink, 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 boink. And it's like plucking the string.
That's awesome.
It's insane.
And have you ever seen the killer whales do, where if there's like seals on a little piece of ice that's floating, they'll like tilt it up and there'll be another on the other side just right
now.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's amazing. It's so awesome. They did that in Futurama and I thought it was a joke, but then I like saw it on a nature show and that's not a joke. Like they really do that. It's just like pouring seals into their mouth.
Nature is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's miraculous. How intelligent human beings are. Because we're still animals, too, I know. Depending on, you know, religious views, you might debate that. But regardless, just the human brain is pretty complex and pretty amazing. And even these animals with these tiny little brains can do just crazy stuff. But then they fall so short. I mean,
there's quite the wide gap.
There's just such a big
gap. I'm letting go of that rice and running away.
Yeah, I'm for sure. Maybe I'm just going to leave my hand in there, punch the villager in the face. And then it was a human trap.
Oh, you flipped the script.
Oh, you flipped the script.
Oh, man. I was kidding you this whole time.
It's like from this movie. I think it was called Stand By Me. It was like a boxing movie. And at the very end, like in this one fight, like the main character, he's like hurts his hand. And the other boxer can see like he's holding his hand down like it's broken or something. And he loses his fight. But at the very end, he does. Oh, because he was fighting like this bare knuckle fight. He punched this guy and he ducks it like he just pulls his chin down, so he hits him on the forehead. Ow. Breaks his hand. So he ends up fighting this guy again at the end, and I'm really foggy on the overall plot of this movie, but at the very end, he does the same thing, and the main character like feigns that it really hurt him, that like broke his hand again. He's just like holding his hand, just like dangling by his side, fighting with his one arm, and then when it really counts, that hand wasn't broken. Oh, wow,
pow, right in the kisser.
Yeah. So make, I think like the line that was like, make him think you're weak when you are strong, something like that.
Why is
that's what the monkey should
by.
Do?
Yeah,
I mean that's how Planet of the Apes starts.
That monkey should just faint.
This Planet of the Apes
that is dead, and then just bite its face off.
Planet of the Apes 9, the monkey trap,
the human trap. South Indian monkey trap. Yeah, I could turn that into a metaphor of some kind, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, Dan.
Episode 15, garbage time.
In the books, yeah, we talked about appliances, Monopoly, Vegas. It was a wide range of topics.
Yeah. So, listener, did you hate this episode?
Let us know. Write us an email.
Leave us a comment.
Yeah, leave us a comment. Leave us a review, but wait. Give us 5 stars, but then tell us why you hated it.
Yeah. Because the point of this podcast is, I mean, what's the point of this podcast? It's to disseminate good information about training, about sports, about the things that we do, but I think we're out.
We've
run out.
The purpose of this podcast is entertainment value of some kind.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this on your way to work, listener, and you chuckled a little bit, and you thought, man, I'm going to go home and catch me a couple monkeys.
Hey, at the end of the day, you get what you pay for, folks.
Works out. And this is free.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, until next time, this was Twinsies.
See ya.